You're listening to a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find other episodes of The View and to subscribe to this podcast, visit questformeaning.org/VUU.
Good morning. Hi, this is Tom Shade, and this is the Church of the Larger Fellowship show, The View. Our regular host, Meg, is somewhere off doing something really important for the future of Unitarian Universalism, and we are here in her stead, and we have a great show today with folks from the Unitarian Universalist youth programming world. We're joined today by two folks, one from the CLF, Anna Eller Isaacs, who is our social media coordinator and an administrative assistant. And she has been very crucial in getting The View out into the world and publicized. So she's a familiar to The View and a part of its infrastructure. And the other person we have today, so why don't you say hello, Hannah?
Hi, everybody. I'm also, I should add that I did youth ministry stuff as a youth when there was Young Religious Unitarian Universalists. I'm a third generation youth ministries person in Unitarian Universalism, and then currently I am a youth group advisor in our local youth group. So, yeah, wearing a few different hats today.
Well, welcome.
But really no hat at all.
And our other guest today is Bart Frost, who is the Director of Youth and Young Adult Ministries at the UUA. And say hello, Bart.
Hey, everybody. Like Hannah, I'm actually a third-generation Unitarian Universalist religious professional as well. And fun fact, Hannah and I actually grew up in leadership of Young Religious Unitarian Universalists together. So that's fun.
Oh, great, great. And heck!
It is true that The View has, like, the highest percentage of people who grew up as Unitarian Universalists compared to, like, any other Unitarian Universalist thing that I've ever been part of besides youth group. So it's welcome, and we and Bob, we don't want you to feel left out, you know. But welcome from the rest of us.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Now, Hank, you were a Unitarian. We're going to get this out of the way really quick because us old geezers have to, you know, mention that we have some connection to youth programming back when the earth was young. And
exactly.
All the animals spoke the same mother tongue. Hank.
You know, right? You know how old I was? I'm so old that I proposed the name YRUU at the Common Ground too. That's how old I was.
Oh my goodness.
Exactly. And I met my wife. My wife was working in the my wife Rebecca was working in the youth office when we first met in 1990, and 10 years later we got married.
Don't rush it, no thanks.
My parents were some of Hank's advisors at Common Ground too, and then Hank was a grown up at one of our youth events.
God bless you. God bless you.
Using
the term loosely.
And I was an LRY back between 1962 and 1966 in Youngstown, Ohio. And then I was also a youth advisor for 6 years in Palatine, Illinois. So some of us have memories of it. Joanna apparently escaped all of this.
The story, this is really, now as a grown-up, this is really embarrassing. We had moved to an area that had a UU church, the church where actually I wound up serving an internship, Northwoods, and I walked in, so I probably was like a freshman in high school, and this grown-up came up to me and said, oh, the youth don't stay in the service. We have a group for them, and it's called NUTS, Northwoods UUs. And I just turned to my mom and said, no, let's go. So just a little tip, please do not name your youth group something adorable.
Seriously.
And Bob, you What was your...
I can tell you about CYO, growing up Catholic.
Okay, Catholic Youth Organization.
Playing basketball and, you know...
Wow, see, you know...
Praying the rosary.
So...
Well, YRGU sounds like a lot more fun, frankly.
Probably it is, at least some of the time. So... Let's start with the big question with Bart. What's going on with youth and young adult ministries at the UUA level at this point? What's the state of play? And Hank and I will avoid coming back and saying, "Well, back in our day, we used to." So we'll just set that aside. So what's going on, Bart?
Well, you know, if y'all want to, we're always open to hearing wisdom from our elders, especially MTV's punk rock minister, which when we mentioned that Hank was on MTV back in the day, they're like, wait, that was back when they played music videos, right? So nationally, we have moved away from these youth or governance organizations, instead moving more towards leadership development, spiritual development, faith formation, and programmatic aspects of our movement that really reinforce and deepen youth's connection to Unitarian Universalism. And just to be clear, when I talk about youth, I mean high schoolers, so you know, ninth graders to you know, freshmen to seniors. And for our summer programs, it's always rising. So, you know, it's rising 10th graders because 8th graders haven't yet been, you know, in high school during summer. And that's when most of our programs happen. So we have General Assembly Youth Caucus, which has been around for, I don't know, as long as I've been around. That's actually where I started my leadership and met Hannah. And I've been a leader within this faith, both paid and unpaid, for almost 15 years now, which is about to be my halfway point in my life, where I met my partner too. But we weren't dating back then. So Youth Caucus staff is still around, and we're actually recruiting for staff right now, just as a heads up. So if you want to work with some of the coolest youth in the nation, we need 5 adults, including chaplains, which is a really good position for ministers, as well as 6 youth positions that need to be filled. We also have another program that's geared towards youth and young adults of color, and it was formerly called Multicultural Leadership School, but we rebranded it. It's now Thrive, and we're doing 2 for youth, 1 on the East Coast and 1 on the West Coast, and then 1 for young adults. And we're not sure where the 1 for young adults is going to be, but we're trying to break things up to be developmentally suitable. And the last program, one of the ones that I personally wish was around way back in the day, is Summer Seminary for youth who are interested in being religious professionals, be that a religious educator or a paid youth minister, which we try and dissuade a little bit because there's not a lot of those that are full-time and that you can, you know, make a living at. But if that's your calling, if that's your vocation, we encourage folks. Ministry, parish ministry, community ministry. And what's really interesting is a lot of our young people are really interested in chaplaincy, particularly military chaplaincy, which is an interesting paradigm shift. And so that's kind of what we have going on nationally. And then we're talking about like big theory stuff. But I don't know if y'all want to go there just yet.
Well, we'll get there eventually. We'll get there. I didn't understand some of the things that you said. So I'm going to go back and say, when you say we're no longer interested in these, like, what do you say, governance type things, what are those? I mean, that sounds like a word that means something to you, but not to me. So,
yeah, sure. So like LRY, Liberal Religious Youth, or YRUU, those groups had, you know, sets of bylaws. Said, you know, you must meet at this time and, you know, discuss this issue. And if you go back through the minutes, it's interesting, you know, especially if you go way back to LRY. I think there's a copy in the archives where the board of LRY is talking. They appear to spend about an hour talking about a 5-cent beard, not beer as in alcohol, beard as in like this, tax. Or like in YRUU when we let ourselves get caught up in consensus building or consensus making and ignore the larger issues, which is how are we living our lives as Unitarian Universalists, especially when we're younger as youth? You know, how are we reinforcing that identity within our young people as a part of all of the work that we do with them, not just in their congregations, but in the spaces outside their congregations that are speaking to their hearts and their souls as well.
Now, do you guys give programmatic direction to local congregations in their youth work?
Our polity, not really, because of our polity. You know, we do provide resources to congregations and make suggestions, but not necessarily, you know, this is what you should do.
Okay. So basically your work is around these three larger programs, you know, the Youth Caucus at GA, the Thrive program, and then the Summer Seminarians. And other than that, providing resources in general and some theory, local congregations are on their own to develop their own youth programming. Is that the state of play?
Yeah, very much like congregations are on their own to develop their own social justice models, or, and this is a totally separate topic that we'll have to hit another time, but, you know, campus ministries too, stuff like that.
Okay, all right. And there's not a national anymore, a national organization of Unitarian Universalist youth like YRU2 or LRY was, you know, with a national president, et cetera. Wasn't Rob, your dad, LRY president at one point?
He was, in fact, yes.
Okay, he mentioned that to me one time back when we were gathered for prune juice martinis at the GA bar. But
I just want to point out that we've lost Hank.
I know.
Because old people are uncomfortable with technology.
Yes, that's true.
It's probably what's going on with that. Right.
He's probably trying to find a 13-year-old kid to help him plug back in his cord.
I don't want to derail where we're going, but I'm really curious to hear about this trend towards young people interested in being military chaplains.
Yeah.
So do you want to hold that conversation, or do you want to?
No, let's go there. Let's go there.
What's up with that, Bart? What do you say?
What do you think's going on? So I think it's very much a larger conversation about what moves young people in spiritually. So we do have within the larger movement, within regions and districts, we have various leadership development trainings, and for a long time we've had a chaplain program, which over the years has changed. When it was first developed, they gave out lay leader stoles, and people weren't exactly happy with that, and some people still don't like them being called chaplains because they're really peer listeners and things like that. But what this shows us, in most districts and regions that have some sort of chaplain program for youth to spiritually care for, in addition to adults spiritually care for their community and that mentorship relationship, those are some of the most beneficial experiences that our youth report out. And so, because they want to take care of one another, because their community matters to them. Our young people, our youth, and our young adults, but primarily our youth, really understand the concept of covenant, and they understand what it means to come together as a community. And so when they start to look at careers and someone says, you know, you can have a job that is taking care of your community, that is taking care of communities, all of a sudden their eyes light up. And I'm not sure all of them come into summer seminary knowing that a professional chaplain is different than a youth chaplain. But when they leave summer seminary, they do. And we have at least one from every previous program. We're going into our fourth year this summer, and we're going to be at Star King School for the Ministry. And we're partnering with both the Southern Region and the Pacific Western Region of the UUA to hold that program. And so the past three programs, which have been in Boston, Chicago, and Denver, at least one person has come out of that saying, I'm really interested in military chaplaincy. Can you connect me with a military chaplain? And what's great is we do have these wonderful military chaplains, you know, throughout the United States that we can connect them with. And then there's at least a couple more in each of those groups that are like, I'm really interested in being a hospital chaplain, which really surprises me, but that's mostly because hospitals aren't exactly my favorite place to spend my time.
Being a chaplain is a beautiful way to be. So, but I'm also just intrigued about the military thing, which I know is a complicated space for Unitarian Universalists. I say this as a veteran myself, but I'm also intrigued. I wonder, you know, we've been at war for 14 years. 2.6 million Americans have passed through Iraq or Afghanistan, and I imagine for our young UUs, sometimes that's their cousins or their older siblings who are the ones, you know, paying the price.
Well, and not just that, but also, you know, the military is typically 18 to 24 is that prime age range too, which is, you know, that's our youth and young adults.
Those are your people, our people.
Yeah, it's a big young adult mission field, you know. So, Hannah, what's your perspective on this? Is the CLF active in these youth initiatives at the UUA, or does the CLF have their own youth ministry? How is that working?
So, without by any means throwing CLF under the bus, the answer is no. We are focused on so many things that youth and young adults are a part of, but we don't have like a separate thing for them to do. And I think that speaks to the CLF is an incredibly accessible congregation, especially for people who have grown up in the digital age and sort of speak internet fluently, that all of our things are accessible online, in print, however they want to get involved in that. For a while, we had an organization called Church to the Younger Fellowship, and the leadership just wasn't so much there. So right now in CLF, we're really focusing on how are we strengthening our programs that we currently have. So we have a really strong UU military program. So I think that would be one of the ways that I could see these people who are interested in being chaplains in the military getting involved in that, and knowing that there are Unitarian Universalists who are involved in military, who are serving active duty or as chaplains. So that's sort of where I see people just being involved in our community rather than having it be a separate thing. One of the things that's really cool that's happening right now is that the prison ministry program at CLF actually has a high school intern position that is someone who actually went to summer seminary, who Bart knows, Aaron, who is a member of my church youth group. So we're making it more accessible for youth and young adults to be involved in CLF in various ways.
And as CLF becomes more and more social media fueled or driven,
exactly.
It starts moving. Well, just what's the connection do you see between youth and young adult ministry and social media? I think among some of the elders in congregations, they see those two things as being basically the same thing. Oh, well, get on that Twitter machine, and then the young kids will be coming, you know.
Right, which I think is something we need to be very careful about, because the assumption that young people all use social media is actually not a correct one. And
do you have numbers on that or anything like that?
I don't know numbers, but I do know that like a fair number of my kids are like, when you mention Facebook or Twitter, they look at you like you are talking about a typewriter. And it's just moving really quickly at this point. But I do think that for those who are involved on Facebook, on various other social media platforms, they are much more able and willing to form lasting, deep relationships with one another kind of right off the bat. They're doing work. There's not this reticence of like, oh, that's not real connection. That is not widespread in CLF, because people understand that this is their church community and that this is how they're going to communicate with one another. We also do have other ways that we communicate with one another, but I'm thinking about some of our various Facebook groups and really wanting people to understand that they can go deep quickly with their other CLF members and friends who are maybe just communicating with each other through Facebook comments on status updates, and that they are really able to be a supportive community to one another. But I wouldn't ever say we're going to attract you just because we are so into social media. But for those who want that connection, it is, I would say, sometimes easier for them to connect right away. Or easier for us. I mean, I'm a young adult. I grew up in the digital age.
Well, and it's really interesting, too, because, you know, I got scolded recently. Not scolded. I got intervened with by our youth caucus deans, Eric and Andrea, for the way I've been using the office Instagram, which we have. You know, you're not supposed to post multiple times in a row. No one tells you that once you, you know, if that's not your primary mode of communication. Or, like, these new things, like, well, and I say new things, for a youth ministry professional like myself, Snapchat's really scary. Like, I don't want people Snapchatting pictures and then being like, ooh, there's all sorts of boundary issues. And there's a story function, so that if you show up at an event, everyone can add their pictures and their perspective to the wider story. So there's ways that, you know, generationally, we just have to turn around and say, y'all know what's going on. How can we make this a tool that's safe for all of us, too?
So I have a question. Something, an idea that was presented to me recently that I just was like, oh, wow, was, you know, we've had this whole story about how we raise youths in the faith and then they get college age, 20s, and they disappear. And so we've had all these stories around why that happens. And this idea that I heard recently was that actually if you look at UUs across all ages, that generally once someone has been a member of a UU church for about 15 years, no matter if they're 25 or, you know, 65, that's when they drift away. And, you know, and so then there's some questions about, okay, what are we provide, because we do often cater our programs to the new UU. So I'm curious, since you're actually embedded in that, what your thoughts are about that. I thought that was a really intriguing idea because, yeah, I mean, our, you know, if you're raised UU, then by the time you're 20, you have, you know, 15 years of experience of RE and going to rallies and this really, I mean, most of the members of my church, the adult members, do not go to a UU event four times a year. My 16-year-old does because she goes to rallies. Anyway, I was curious any thoughts you had about that.
Yeah, I mean, so I've never heard that statistic before, and that's a really interesting statistic, and I want to have a conversation with Tandy, our resident, bar graph guru, because the anecdotes that I hear around our homegrown UUs is more so on that level of a lot of our stuff is geared towards new UUs. You know, what does it mean that for very, very many years we've seen our faith as a quote-unquote chosen faith? And for a number of folks who grow up in the faith, there's not a choice. I personally believe I didn't have a choice to end up where I am today. I feel like, you know, that there was some sense of the divine and calling that has kept me in relationship with our association, even when I was, you know, full of despair about it. And it's a very interesting conundrum, and it's one that we've been dealing with for, I don't know, 40, 50 years, maybe even longer. You know, what happens to our young people and how do they relate in church? And so this is a question that our office is trying to grapple with and wrestle with and figure out what's going on. It's really interesting, you know, about what there's a lot of different approaches to it. So, you know, what does it mean to live your Unitarian Universalist faith in your congregation and outside of it? And, you know, what happens, I think, in the past, especially with LRY and YRUU, what we were doing is creating two separate spaces, and they never merged. And Kendra Creasy Dean, who's a Methodist youth minister, is, you know, she says the liminal spaces, those spaces where God reaches through and, you know, really tugs on your soul, and those holy spaces, they happen really easily at camps and conferences because you're immersed in your faith experience at that point. At our congregations, our young people aren't necessarily immersed in their faith experiences in that way. Youth groups typically meet either during the same time as Sunday morning worship or in the evening, so they don't get to experience church as a multi-generational community. Instead, it's a place to go where you get fed individually. There's an interesting, I think in the old, in the 2001 COA report on membership, there's a section written by a former youth advisor about, you know, what would happen if we created this space, said this was your space for, you know, for 5 years, and then, you know, after that 5 year mark, we said, sorry, you have to start renting this space, you have to start, you know, attending this other program because you're just no longer allowed to access that space anymore. So how do we integrate liminal experiences and congregational experiences? That's what I'm really focused on right now, because I think that's where the answer is.
I think that takes us back to the conversation about congregational spiritual director, but I see Hannah has some stuff that she wants to talk about.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in because I will say Bart and I were part of YRUU at an amazing time, but also ultimately, at least for me, a very painful time. I was on the steering committee that, for lack of a better word, was part of killing YRUU. That was, I was on the last YRUU steering committee. And after that, I felt like, what is my place in this faith? What is my role? And I think that this idea of our youth being really, really great at being in covenant with one another is part of it. I'm not sure that when you are operating off of a consensus-based model, that you are in beloved community with one another, that there's the space to, and this is something that actually came up recently. I was chaperoning my youth group's trip to Boston, and we were at the UUA, and we met with members of the Board of Trustees, and most of the kids from Unity or the youth from Unity have not been to General Assembly and are not familiar with the process of how decisions get made. And when they heard from board members about the Black Lives Matter decision and the fact that it's made with pro and con mics and made with a very sort of legally binding consensus and Robert's rules and all of that hullabaloo, my kids looked at President Peter Morales and they said, and do you think that's safe for the members of your community? And the board members were like, no. And yet, then what do we use to replace it? And I think that rather, I love where youth ministry is going right now, because it's not saying, come be in this totally separate thing that has no bearing on your congregational life. It's saying, come, develop your spirituality, develop your leadership skills, and be leaders in your congregations. And I'll just say the three youth from my home congregation, Unity Church in St. Paul, who went to summer seminary, are taking active leadership roles in our congregation. They are going to Sunday services. They are leading in our youth group. We have a fairly large youth group. It's 20 to 30 people on an average Sunday, but doesn't normally drop down below 20. And so there's lots of opportunities for leadership there that they are stepping into in this amazing way. I think it's common for seniors in high school to fall away from their youth group because they have so much other stuff going on that year, and thinking about this life transition of sort of not being a youth in the congregation anymore. And I think that the programs that Bart's talking about summer seminary, are really giving our youth the skills and the ability and a sense of welcome to be fully fledged members of our congregations, which in my experience was not there before.
So, nice. So let me get this. Let me get this clear here. Basically, you're saying that the shift in youth, the focus around youth, youth ministry in Unitarian Universalism is moving away from building separate organizations and structures for youth, and more into developing youth leadership within the entire congregation. Is that like a fair summary?
I mean, I wouldn't say, I think there are still some things that are separate, and yeah. Rightfully so. Like, Youth Caucus is its own thing, which is awesome and great, and totally was a formative experience for me. Mm-hmm. But that when they come back, it's less, for me, it was this dynamic of, okay, I go to a conference, which is sort of what Joanna referred to as a rally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we called them rallies.
Yep. Here in the rest of the country, we call them conferences.
Uh-huh.
And when I would come back from that, it's like, okay, I'm bringing this back to my youth group, and it doesn't move outside of that. Mm-hmm. And now when our youth are coming back from summer seminary, from Youth Caucus, from we had a group of youth go to Selma for the 50th anniversary mm-hmm. of the March Across the Bridge, they're not coming back just to the youth group. They're coming back to our wider congregation and doing the hard, hard work of forming beloved community.
They're not just returning to the basement,
right?
In essence.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. They're returning to do the hard, hard work of forming an intergenerational beloved community.
That's a very interesting and what I think positive development. Joanna, you look...
Yeah, I was going to say, so that... I mean, that's very helpful to me because it sounds like that's a change from the way it used to be, right? I mean, I know that one of the things I was hearing a lot was that we you know, through what we call down here rallies, things like that, we raised our kids a certain way, you know, with circle worship and doing, making decisions in one way, and then they would come to church as adults. And it was so completely different that they had no interest. And I know that there were a lot of arguments about, okay, well, then you should just change the church to better match that. And I don't think that's really a practical answer. So it's, I mean, it kind of sounds like that there is thought going into not just the individual development, but also, you know, developing, raising our youth so that they can be a part of the church. And I realize on the church's side, we have a lot of work to do to get young adults into actual leadership and not just, you know, here's our youth member of the board or young adult member of the board.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to reintroduce everybody. You're watching The View. And this is from the CLF, and we're talking about youth and young adult programming with Bart Frost, who's the director of youth and young adult programming at the UUA, and Hannah Eller Isaacs, who's the social media coordinator for the CLF, and also a administrative assistant there, and also extremely experienced in youth. Programming in YRU in Unitarian Universalism as a participant and as a leader and as a youth advisor in her local church, Unity, which is a significantly great place from everything I know. So we also have Hank Pierce, who's back. I don't know, he had to go somewhere, and he's turning 50, so
I got all confused. It didn't work.
We have to worry about elopement, you know, just kind of wandering off. And, you know, my minders keep me here, so, you know, actually I'm not allowed to leave. But Joanna Fontaine Crawford down in Austin joining us. And we've been talking a lot about youth and high school age. Can we switch a little bit and talk about young adult? And one of the things I just wanted to hear you guys' opinions about is, you know, we've just come through watching and witnessing this incredible struggle at University of Missouri, Columbia, Mizzou. I never heard it called Mizzou. I thought for a long time you're talking about Missoula. That's not like. But anyway, Mizzou in Columbia, Missouri. And then now in the news, very similar kinds of activity going on at Ithaca College. And it just seems like college campuses and young adults are becoming are undergoing a movement upsurge around racism. And I'm wondering if you guys have perspective or experience or whether or not the people you're in contact with through your professional work have anything to report on that. Bart? It's okay to say no. I know I just throw you a big question, and it's okay to. I'm really looking for information at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any specific information other than, you know, there are Unitarian Universalist young adults from all across this nation who go to universities. I know that a number of them have been active at Yale currently because Yale's going through a very big issue with racism, both internalized and blatant racism. And our young people, our Unitarian Universalist young people, have always been on the forefront of pushing our movement towards justice. That arc that's bending, that it's being bent by our young people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's an important thing to realize and an important thing to remember. So while we haven't, there's one, Rhiannon Johnson Levy is the one young adult that I know who's been writing specifically about Yale, but I do know that we have some Mizzou alumni floating around the association as well, and that there's a lot of conversations amongst our young adults on campuses as to how they can be allies to people of color in their communities and support the movement as well.
I was just going to jump in. I think this is one of those places where we were talking about social media earlier, and social media activism is huge right now. Mm-hmm. And being able to put on your Facebook page or your Twitter or your Snapchat that you believe, affirm, and promote that Black Lives Matter is maybe not as seen as directly putting yourself on the line as going to a march or, you know, an action of some kind. But I think there is something to be said for what people are putting online and what they're supportive of. CLF has been really, you know, pushing out that we, how are we going to be part of this activism when we don't have a physical building to hang a Black Lives Matter sign on? And we can't bring all of our members to one event. And I think that's a lot of what's happening in the youth world. But I just want to echo and lift up and say again what Bart said. It bears repeating that youth have been on the forefront of justice work in Unitarian Universalism since before Unitarians and Universalists merged. And that this is something that Bart and I were a part of as youth, are still a part of as young adults, and I think this is where some of that we're not going to leave Unitarian Universalism is coming from, is our deep commitment to justice work.
Well, if I can, if you'll indulge me for one old story here. Back in 1962 to 1966, when I was in LRY, you know, our churches were not, the churches that I were involved with were not, you know, were taking a kind of very watchful eye toward things like the Mississippi Summer Freedom Project, et cetera, like that. But in LRY, we were meeting college students who had gone to Mississippi and had come back. And so in the youth part of Unitarian Universalism at that point, there was a lot more interest and activity around the anti-racist struggle that was going on in that age. And in contradiction, not in contradiction, but differently than the adults, differently than the adults. And so I think that that's, that was true then, and I can certainly see how that would be true now.
I have a question. Change of direction, if it's okay. As a guy who didn't grow up UU, I'm curious to hear about the history of why RUU and what happened. Hannah, you alluded to it, and if someone wanted to give me a thumbnail, I'm sure there are listeners who are like me who just don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't want to step on Hannah's thing. I mean, I think part of it is that there's always a every you know, 20, 40 years, 20, 30 years, there's always some like change that happens. You know, and often it's you know, part of the denomination sort of saying, you know, this needs to be updated. The, you know, there aren't enough adults, you know, taking part in this, in helping shape this, and so these things kind of get, you know, I mean, I was right at the end of LRY and the start of YRUU, and that was a big part of it, sort of saying like, oh, you know, we need to, it's drifted too far away from the church, from the our movement, and we need to sort of pull folks back in. But I, you know, and I don't want to like
the time frame when this was happening.
So that was 82, you know, and you know, sort of like basically, you know, I joined. So yeah, so why are you? LRY was still going on in 1980, but by 1981, they started to going. All right, how do we redevelop this, and how do we, you know, get more buy-in from adults? Because I think, you know, that was the 70s, the 60s and 70s. It was a lot of like people going like. There were a lot of adults talking about youth empowerment, but I think a lot of that was from adults who didn't want to take any responsibility. They're off doing their own thing, and so like, well, it's youth autonomous, and they kind of, you know, pushed us out the. I have a very Gen X like, you know, view on things, and but you know, that's certainly been my experience, and but you know, and I was certainly a witness to how the. How the denomination dealt with issues that, which I think it was uncomfortable for them to necessarily deal with, like how do we talk to the kids, and they're spending a lot of money doing stuff, and you know, I just remember that when the UUA first came out and sort of said we're going to become an anti-racist organization, that it was the youth office who went, okay, let's do this, you know, and everyone else was in some ways sort of paying lip service or even just sort of taking a longer view of it. But the youth office was kind of like, let's do this, you know, all right, and which was great, and yet at the same time it really sort of put that leadership, you know, into conflict with the denomination too. And I think there's also just lots of other like organizations that the UUA didn't know how to necessarily deal with, and I'll stop before I start making like. Speculations and proclamations, but for folks who really sort of lived it, I will defer to Hannah and Bart to talk more about what that was like for them.
So I think lots of what Hank said was really on point. There's this struggle between youth autonomy and between saying you got this and we're not going to give you enough resources to actually do the work that you're wanting to do. And that for many years, when I was in YRUU, the youth were seen as this their own thing. There was not a whole lot of collaboration. And when there was collaboration, it was like a calling out situation. It was like, why are you saying y'all are not doing this anti-racism work right? We are doing this work right. I'm not sure that we really were. I would like to just, that is my personal right. I think there are lots of people who were alienated and left during that period because of the work we were doing. My personal wish would be to apologize to those people and call them back into our faith. But I think that that is the crux of it, is that there was this sense of autonomy, but we weren't actually given the resources to really build an organization. Ultimately, it came down to, in my opinion, right, this is all one, there's no one truth to this story. The UUA board said, we are going to restructure YRUU, and we can either do it with you or without you. And you decide how you want that to happen. And Bart mentioned we got hung up on consensus, and that is what happened. There was a youth caucus, and we argued over a comma for a long time. And youth caucus ended, and that was youth council. That was my bad. Youth council ended, and that was the last one.
Wow. So what year was that?
2005, I believe.
That was the youth council that happened was in 2004, where that debate happened. YRU didn't officially disband until between 2007 and 2009.
Okay, so 1982 and then 2007. So what is it? That's 25 years. Okay, so that's kind of like one generation. I guess people should start thinking about what's going to happen in 2030, right? Is that'll be when we're due for a new iteration of youth programming?
And I think this new iteration might be it. I'm not sure that there's going to be some major shift in many years, because what we're focusing on now is faith formation and leadership development. And really, I think there's been a shift. I mean, when I was coming up in religious education, I was almost born in a Unitarian church, right? Both my parents are ministers. And so I knew about...
Wait, do you mean that your mom almost gave birth to you, like, in the church one Sunday morning, you mean? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, so she did a wedding on my due date.
That's faith.
There were ministers sitting in the front row ready to take over for her if she went into labor and her
boiling
and my
hot
dad
water
had to go.
Collecting towels.
Your mom totally kicks ass. That's great.
But we came up in a time when congregations, the religious education curriculum was about other faiths and about other people. And that's, I'm not saying at all that we don't need to learn those things, but for someone to graduate high school in a Unitarian Universalist congregation and not know our principles and not know our history is an issue for me. And one that Unity is really trying to address through, you know, building those things in right from the start. And I think that that's been a shift over the last 15 years of how are we going to start specifically Unitarian Universalist faith formation at a very young age.
And I think also in this the larger sort of not just denominational move, but sort of the larger move of how religious institutions in America sort of moving out away from brick and mortar churches will really sort of help us. I mean, you know, I'm having this birthday party this weekend, and all of these old friends of mine that I knew from youth group are coming, and many of them still consider themselves Unitarian Universalists, except that they don't go to a local church because they don't like the local church or whatever. But, you know, there's a part of me that really feels like, well, here's an opportunity for us to try to, like, you know, at least pull some of those folks back in and allow them to feel like they're still Unitarian Universalists, even though they haven't signed a membership book.
They can always join the Church of the Larger Fellowship.
So how important is this issue of developing specifically UU identity? This was something really interesting to me recently at the church where I serve, and this was about religious education more for children. We were having a question, you know, parents and all were talking about this. And so for RE, we were laying out our different priorities, and one was UU identity. And some of the parents who are new UUs, like, we're kind of horrified, you know, like, oh, no, don't develop any UU identity. And then it was the parents who grew up UU who kind of rushed forward to say, this is important, and this was important to me to have this religious identity. Curious your thoughts on that. Is that something that should just happen, or should we be kind of focusing on it?
I'd say it's vital. Like Hannah said, you know, and if you do like the RE philosophy Renaissance module, you know, our faith has gone through theological transitions and religious education philosophy waves as well. And when my mother was a DRE, it was very much the neighboring faiths, go find out everything else about other religions, and then, you know, if you find Unitarian Universalism and that's your faith, that's okay. As a lifelong UU, a birthright, a cradle, whatever word you want to use to define that, I'd say it's vital. And what I've been looking at in my role, when I first got this job, I was like, okay, where are we going? Here are my thoughts, and how can I reinforce that? I found this book by Kendra Creasy Dean called Almost Christian, where she looks at what makes devoted youth. what are the hallmarks of devotion, mostly amongst mainline youth? And, you know, the Mormons are at the top. And if Mormons can get their kids up an hour before school to go to church, how come we can't get our people to church on a Sunday morning?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where are our values being lived, and where are they being lifted up? So for me, Unitarian Universalist identity is absolutely vital and core, not just to youth ministry or religious education, but to the future of our faith.
Wow. Last words from anybody, though. That, you know, that served as a great benediction. You know, it's now you say, go now in peace. But any last words from anyone else? We're approaching the end of our time. I should say that our next week's show will be our monthly show on Black Lives of UUs. And I'm not exactly sure who our guests are, but you know they're going to be interesting. You know, Bob, have you been following that? You know who our guests are?
Yeah, it's gonna be Leslie Butler McFadyen, and we have a couple of tentatives. So just with that in mind, knowing that it's to be determined, possibly Reverend Karen Hutt or Erica Totten. I do know we will talk about the Year Without Tamir, by Tamir Rice, child who was shot in Cleveland.
And
also love and self-care in the movement for Black lives. So how do folks who are fighting the good fight take care of themselves and each other?
Mm-hmm. And Bart, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, so last year we did a youth ministry survey of youth who visited the UUA, and it was a very poorly crafted survey. I did it really poorly, and it was really limited. And you can read the results on Blueboat, which is our blog, but we're doing a new survey about Unitarian Universalist youth ministry, and I hope to expand it to people who work with youth as well right now. And those links will be out on our Twitter and on our Facebook, Unitarian Universalist Youth Ministry, and they've gone out to the UUMA and to Lareda as well. So if you could share that with youth in your life, we're trying to figure out what they actually believe. Mm-hmm. So fun fact, last time I looked, out of 63 responses, 50 youth believe that Unitarian Universalists, they agree that Unitarian Universalists can believe whatever they want, or can believe anything and be a Unitarian Universalist. That's the type of information that we're trying to, that's a response a lot of people get. They're like, what are we doing? So that's what we're trying to figure out, so then we can come out with resources and support to really, you know, lift up the future of Unitarian Universalism.
So and every, go ahead.
You can find the youth off, the Department of Youth and Young Adult Ministries Twitter on CLF's Twitter, which is at CLFUU.
There we go. Social media coordinator coordinating away. Okay, I think we're running out of time. Thank you for joining us this week on The View. I think we've had a great discussion, and we could always talk about youth and young adult programming
for many
sessions. All right. Take care. Bob, why don't you pull up our
This has been a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find out more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.